Oh man, this game's scary for all the wrong reasons. It's Ghouls and Ghosts on the next R. Sinclair. Everyone, welcome to another mistake-free edition of R. Sinclair. I'm your good buddy, your good pal, Amigo here. Today, joined by a real hack and a ghoul, I'll give you the Brent. Well, you butchered that opening, the Brent.
Thank you, man.
Also, you kind of showed your cards as your opinion of the game. We'll get to that here.
No, I'm...
So it was a swerve?
It's a swerve, man.
Wow, you're real clever. I could tell that right away. Yeah. So, again, welcome to R. Sinclair. It's the wacky American look at the British stalwart computer. Yeah, we're the wacky Americans looking at the ZX Spectrum. This week, it should be a lot of fun, the Brent, because we'll be looking at ghouls and ghosts.
Yes.
It's funny how you say that. Listen, you're not the first dipstick that got these two games confused. Ghosts and Goblins, Ghouls and Ghosts.
Well, one's a sequel of the other.
Yeah, but I mean, I would rather just call it Ghosts and Goblins 2.
No.
That would have been a lot easier.
No. If you're not going to number your sequels, this is the way to do it.
In all honesty, this week when I was researching this game, I had to repeatedly check the Discord to make sure I was looking at the right game over and over because I was so paranoid that I would look at the wrong game. So you're... botched opening confirms what we all knew. It's difficult to remember or say. This game is known for being double tough, rock hard in the arcade, the Brent. Now,
yeah.
Before we get to this game, what are the other games that come to your mind? When you were a kid, you went to the arcade. There's always those games that you tried one time and then ran away scared. You're never trying that again because you know you couldn't get anywhere.
Because it was too hard?
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, Contra. Contra was a game that I wanted to like, but it was so difficult I couldn't get into it. I usually gravitate towards hard arcade games. We were talking last week about Trojan. I love that. It's brutally hard. Yeah. But, I mean, arcade games are made to play for 5 minutes and then you're out the door. And 5 minutes would be actually very generous.
Some games aren't made for 5 minutes, I can tell you that.
But it's all part of the business model. So going in that the game's going to let you play for X amount of time and then punish you and get the next guy up.
Yeah. You know, when I think of the hard games from the arcade that Little Aaron stayed clear of, the first one that comes to mind instantly was Defender. This game was, I looked at the control pad on this.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God.
That's the thing.
There's no joystick. There's like 17 buttons.
Defender was hard for different reasons. I mean, The game itself was difficult.
Yeah, it is.
Even when you're playing with a stick and a good layout. But yeah, the cabinet itself was intimidating.
Another one, well, I will say, both these games, I steered clear of the arcade. They were too hard. Another one, this is an obscure one. But I saw this thing in the back of Goldmine, our local arcade, for years. And I never even put a quarter in it. And it was Thayer's Quest. It's a laziness game with a full keyboard. I remember looking at this thing and being like, man, I couldn't even begin. I never saw hardly anybody playing it. And the people that did try to play it, they got instantly obliterated and no idea what was going on.
Yeah.
Laserdisc games were not what I would call a good investment unless you were very good at the game. Because that's one that will take your money and just leave you sitting there slack-jawed. In about 10 seconds, you could be dead.
But it's also got one of the biggest payoffs in arcade history. Because if you're good at it and you can get through the game, you will get a crowd.
Well, that's true. That's true. And I will say that, for example, when we saw someone playing a really difficult game like Cliffhanger or something. And it's funny, I invested enough money in Cliffhanger to where I could get... somewhere. For me, the judgment on that was, can you get past the opening bank heist? If you get past that, you've done something.
Yeah.
You know, so that was one I used to see people struggle on. Another game that I wouldn't call this hard, but it could be hard because the difficulty was variable. It's when you walked into an arcade and wanted to fight somebody in one of those fighting games, depending on who they were, they could crush you inside like 3 seconds when you're just learning one. It was a moida.
I was the guy that knocked for those games.
Oh, so. My God. Listen, you're using that one, too.
I'm sorry. I was really good at
you weren't good at all Fighter of them. You told me you were good at like Primal Rage.
No, I didn't. Yeah, but I didn't play those.
So if you thought it was too hard or you weren't good enough, you just stayed away from it. How'd you get good?
No, first of all, I played a lot.
Yeah.
But I didn't force myself to learn games that I wasn't interested in. I played Street Fighter 2. I played the Street Fighter series, the Mortal Kombat series, Killer Instinct, Samurai Showdowns. Yeah. And that was pretty much it.
Those were
the fighting and the versus series. Those were the fighting games that I stuck to. I didn't wander off into the unknown very often when it came to fighting games.
I will say that just a batch of games that were always tough were those bullet hell shooters. Like trying to get a hook into those things is nigh impossible.
Well,
I mean, they had their fans.
Yeah.
But those games did well at home for a reason because then you didn't have to waste all your money trying to figure them out. Because they were super tough. I will say it was gratifying to walk into an arcade. This part wasn't gratifying. To walk in there and get hammered on a game and slowly get better at it. Which I remember, for example, when we first started playing Mat Mania, we couldn't get past the first guy. Like, he would crush us. And then we couldn't get past the second guy. But slowly, we got to the point where we could crush everyone all the time. And it was quite gratifying when you get better at a game. But some games defy the ability to get better at, and I would guess that the two games we're going to talk about today are both in that category. Wouldn't you agree? I mean, even with a lot of practice, you're not just going to walk in there and ace it. There's a good chance you're going to look like
no. These games, both Ghosts and Goblins, before this game and Ghouls and Ghosts, it's all about pattern recognition. It's all about figuring out the first time what to do and then actually doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's get into it, the brand here. So we are here to talk about, despite what Brent opened with, it's Ghouls and Ghosts. Before we get into it, we got to talk about, you can't talk about Ghouls and Ghosts without talking about the beginning game in the series, which is Ghosts and Goblins. This game roared into the arcade in 85, developed and published by Capcom and directed by Takuro Fujiwara. Now, Fujiwara is an interesting fellow in arcade lore. This guy was no hack.
No.
You know what I mean? He came over, I think it was from Konami, after putting down Puyan in one of his early efforts, which is one of our... I love that game. It's super original and fun.
Yeah.
A beautiful game. But he wasn't done yet. He rolled into Capcom and cranked out and directed Commando, Bionic Commando, Strider. He did Volgus, Tiger Road. He did both these games, directed both these. So this guy, and then went on to do a lot of stuff. He was working on the Wii stuff. So this guy was around for a while, and this guy was a legend in Capcom circles. This was programmed by a fellow named Toshio Arima in the arcade. I'm talking about Ghosts and Goblins. Again, this was released in 85. It did have it did well, so stunningly. And it's the story of a knight named Sir Arthur who has to defeat a bunch of bad guys to rescue Princess Prinprin, who was kidnapped by Azeroth or the devil or the great Satan, depending on where you're at, king of the demon world. And it was known for being 8,000 shades of tough, super hard game.
Yep.
I was reading that when he developed this game, he was developing it. There are test versions of this. And Fujiwara got in the arcade to watch people play it, and he would see how they were exploiting stuff and doing stuff to get around some of his difficulty. So he would go back and program harder stuff. You know, he wanted to make it super challenging. Mission accomplished, Fujiwara. It's exactly what it is. This thing got a release on everything.
Yes.
It was quite popular. It's funny. I'd always heard this game did real well in the arcade. And I think it did pretty well, but I mean, it was released in 85. There's a lot of stuff going on.
Exactly.
But it was certainly did well enough to get a ton of ports, including in 86 to the ZX Spectrum in June of 86. I had a look at the original game And it was not bad. It was not bad at all. And I'll talk more about my look at it when we get more deeply into the second game. So now let's talk about Ghouls and Ghosts. So when Ghosts and Goblins was real popular, you know they're going to pump out a sequel.
Absolutely.
And so Capcom had just put the finishing touches on the CPS-1 board set. This was a system that you could literally, it's almost like a cartridge-based system where you could literally pop off one game and put on another one to make it easier to swap out arcade games. These things were revelations back in the day, and of course, eventually they moved on to the also successful Capcom CPS-2.
Yes.
This was the second, I believe the second release on the CPS-1, and the graphically was an incredible leap forward. Amongst the thing they changed in the second one, where they gave Arthur the ability to shoot up in the air, which was because in the first one, once you jumped, and once you shot forward, and it was real hard. Yeah. So, of course, they also made this up 1,000 times as difficult. So, shooting up is a necessity. Again, this was Fujiwara, and this game also did very well and was ported everywhere. It was a top five arcade game. This one is probably the one most people remember when they think of the series, the good looking one. It's funny, the original was probably more well known as a Nintendo game than it was in the arcade. Nintendo did a really good job.
Their port was really good.
And so the sequel, of course, it did great. It became the eighth highest grossing arcade game of 89 in Japan. Pretty good. And it also had, I'd say, the home run version of this one, in terms of what the critics say, is probably the Sega Genesis version.
Nah, Super Nintendo.
Well, the EGM gave that version the best game of the year in 89, which is a pretty lofty award. And a lot of the critics think the Genesis version is the best version. You be the judge. Brent, you're a homer, though, so you don't get to talk.
What? I actively
He's full of rage.
I actively dislike Nintendo at this point in my life.
You do? Why?
Yeah, we're not going to get into that right now.
Oh, man. Hidden knowledge.
But no, the Super Nintendo version of this game was incredibly good. Yeah. Incredibly good.
The game, it's a lot more, they put a lot more nuttiness in it. There's a lot more like the world has changed quite a bit in terms of like what happens. With like, they do a lot more with like sliding stuff and moving earth and stuff like that.
They have the level fight you just as much as the creatures on the level.
This was a great, this was a great 1-2 punch for the CPS-1. CPS-1 board was awesome.
Yeah.
You know, I believe that was the same one that like Final Fight was on, that sort of thing. So they cranked out some real winners. And of course, Nintendo saved, Capcom saved themselves a bunch of money and made themselves a lot of friends in the arcade community, because it was so much simpler just to swap these out. We had some CPS-1 games. Yep. I believe Street Fighter was a 2 was amongst the CPS-1 games. And we had a copy of that, a few other ones. And while we never actually, it's funny, by the time we got into the arcades, these things, you really didn't swap anything out. They just came as a whole board. We didn't do any swapping. So with all that said, eventually it was time to port the game, Ghouls and Ghosts. And it came to the ZX in the year of our Lord, 1989, published by U.S. Gold. You know it's gold, brother.
Yeah. No, that's usually, man, talk about a coin flip.
I had to do some digging to find out exactly who did this port. And everything I read said that the Spectrum version was done by an outfit called Software Creations. Now, Software Creations, I knew from, they'd done a lot of console stuff. But they did do some stuff on the ZX, including Agent X2, Raw Recruit, The Sentinel, and my personal favorite, and hopefully somewhere in the near future we'll be covering this one, Scumball. Scumball. Sounds like a real winner. But they did a lot of stuff on the consoles. The ZX version programmed by a fellow named Mike Fallon. He did a few things we've actually done. He was involved in Black Lamp, for example, Brent. We played the Atari ST version. He did Vectron, Star, Firebird. That sounds like a pretty cool
game. I'm not going to hold him being part of Black Lamp against
him. The graphics were by a fellow named Ben Jackson. He did the graphics in Gauntlet 2, ARG, Speedboat Assassins. That sounds pretty cool. And my personal favorite, the Sinclair Action Pack Light Gun games, which I think Boat got. And he also had a hand in Double Dragon. And then lastly, the music was done by Tim Fallon. I don't know if Tim and Mike are related. Same last name, so I bet they are. He worked on the exact same stuff as Mike. But also worked on Renegade Bionic Commando. And then the cover art for the tape, pretty cool, was done by Ian Naylor, who worked on the covers for Thunderblade, Blood Brothers, a few other games. This game was released as a, this will work on your 48K Speccy and your 128. And if you've got the 128, you get the tunage.
Yeah.
I did play the one, I played this on the Mister with the 128K version, and that I will say the tunage is welcome to break up. I mean, it's not like there's music playing nonstop, but there you get a nice opening tune, level tune, stuff like that.
That's good. Yeah, it's good.
This game, this game has a slightly more morbid opening. Oh, by the way, the ZX version has no opening. It doesn't have any opening cinematic. It's funny because even Ghosts and Goblins for the ZX had a small opening that kind of tell you what this one had nothing. So it's just read it, I guess, is the way you had to do it. The backstory to this one, you are back in the armor of Sir Arthur. And this time, basically, now I'll tell you what I read. From what I read at the beginning of this, it shows in the arcade, the devil guy comes in and basically kills your girlfriend, takes some pot shots at you too, and kind of hurts you, and kills a bunch of people. It's a dead scene.
Well, you know, he got showed up in that last game, and he's got to come back with a vengeance.
Yeah. So Prin, he not only did he kind of hose her, he took her soul, brother. Yeah, he's a soul man, like Shao Kahn, or no, it was a Shang Tsung. Anyway, he took her soul. And now you've got to go rescue her soul. I don't know. I guess it's funny. I never got near the end of this, so I don't know. Assumably, once you get her soul back, maybe you can res her. You know, maybe you give her a rest. Of course, to get to her, you've got to go through 4 million stages of absolute certain death, pain, blues, and agony. It's 10 stages. It's brutal on your way to get to her. And so a lot of the characters from the first game make appearances in this game. Brent, when this one honed into view, you get a lovely loading screen, which is quite nice. Yeah. Then you're treated to the kind of bland. The ZX isn't known for its incredible menu systems when it comes to games, and this is another one. Just like, you know, here it is.
I mean, it lets you set up your keys. What do you want?
Space bar. I did my playing this week on the Kempston joystick setting. This does give you the usual myriad of joystick and keyboard options. I guess you played with the keyboard. So we'll see how that goes. So the game starts with an overworld map where it just shows you where you're going to go. And then you start off in the graveyard area. Brent, when this thing fires up, what were your first impressions?
Well, I wanted to hate the graphics.
Yeah.
Because the original is so... I mean, it's dark and drab, but somehow bursting with color at the same time.
Yeah.
It's amazing how they're able to pull that off. So I wanted to be angry at this game. I wanted to not like the graphics in this game.
Not good first impression, man.
But no, I'll have to say, they did a remarkable job with what they had available. I could tell everything that they were trying to represent, I could tell what they were going for. And that's not always true with Spectrum games, but it was absolutely true for this game. And even though they don't have a Arthur with and without armor, when you get hit, you do still have a little explosion effect.
Yeah.
That's like, you know, you've got one hit left. So I appreciate that. They don't have different palette swaps for gold, the silver armor or the gold armor either. Not to be too unexpected, though. That's a lot of sprite changes for a Spectrum game. But that aside, as I played, I was like, man, what are they going to do graphically when they get to this point in the game? Because this, you know, it was really crazy. Like the land transformations and stuff like that, they didn't. They didn't try on any of those. They had one minor land transformation part where the land kind of crumbles behind you for a little while. But for the most part, they did not attempt that. And probably for the best, it would have been way too technically difficult for a system of this caliber to attempt those sort of graphic effects. But I was very appreciative of the graphics, even though they went very solid color, because you almost have to. There's almost no color clash in this game.
Mm-hmm.
But you are basically playing a black and white game.
Well, it's not really black and white. But it's a solid color and black.
Yes.
Yeah. I am not going to be as forgiving as you.
Oh, my gosh. Graphics.
I played the original version of this. I think Elite did the original, I think. And I would say the original version looks better than this one in a lot of ways. It's just this one has they don't even try on any backgrounds. The texturing wasn't as good. Something I will say, there's some nice detail in some of the bad guys.
Yeah,
but I was let down. The fact that they don't do a very good job of giving Arthur the different looks is weak. The fact that it could have done it, they just didn't do it. I'm just telling you.
They packed a ton into this game.
Well, that's not enough for me. I would like to have seen a better. Now, it's not a total. It's not like this is disgusting looking. You're right. They're not going to pull off the beauty, the kind of dark view of the arcade. The arcade, of course, had all sorts of backgrounds and slight parallax here and there, and a lot of terrain changes. And effects that you're going to be hard pressed to get on a ZX. They went the easy route, a smart route, and used solid colors for everything, so you don't get the color clash. Although sometimes I noticed that in some areas I would have trouble, because sometimes you're walking in front of stuff, and on a few levels I had trouble actually differentiating Arthur from the background. So that was something I would. Yeah,
I never had that issue.
I did. So there was also that. But overall, I thought it looked okay. And again, the sound, I wouldn't call the sound, if you've got the one in 2024, just play the 128 version so you get the music. It's worth having.
Well, yeah,
I found it satisfying. But I mean, we're not going to sit here and go on about the incredible soundtrack. It's okay.
It's good, but if you don't have it, it's not going to dramatically change your game.
A few other notes when I played this. Now, again, I played this on the Mister. I did have this crash on me a couple times. One time, the section where you're on like the little pad and it's scrolling upward, or actually they're scrolling downward to you and you're going upward. That crashed on me there twice. I switched builds so I could try to see if that would happen again, and it didn't happen the second time. But also, I was using a hack so I could have so my Arthur was indestructible. So I'm not going to hold their feet to fire on that.
Yeah, no kidding. I had no crashes.
Listen, if I was going to play the game,
cheat either.
If I was going to play the game, if I was going to see the game, let's back up.
All right.
But graphics aside, sound aside, this game is unfairly difficult, to the point where I wonder how well anyone can. I'm sure there are mutants out there that were good at this game, but I mean, I don't know how often you get to sit there and try to memorize everything to get very far in this game. This is a game, and I will say, I suck at the arcade game too. These games are legendarily famous for being hard, but being popular, for me, they're legendarily famous for being hard, because I never liked either one of them. I mean, I think they're both nice graphically. I like the plot. I like the atmosphere, but the actual gameplay is I don't like a game where it's just like, it's impossible. And this isn't even sort of the fun kind of impossible, like Manic Miner, where I think I got a shot at it. This is cheap, but this game, and again, I didn't get that far in the arcade, so I can't make too many comparisons here, but like, this game has like blind jumps in it. It's purposely designed to screw you. Stuff pops up right on top of you over and over. And then there's the ever-popular portion. Even when you try to get good stuff, there are treasure boxes that pop up hither and yon, and you get them. And more often than not, there's an evil wizard in there that will turn you into a duck, which that's in the game.
Yeah.
And so then you have to spend the next couple of seconds walking around and jump without the ability to defend yourself as a duck, which is cute. The first time it happened, I laughed. I'd forgotten about it. But it didn't make the game any easier. The way things attack, they come in at angles that are purposely designed to be, and this is, I'm not blaming the programmers for this, this is the way it was in the arcade. They're purposely designed to come in at angles to make it difficult for you to defend yourself, or they come up in ways that make it difficult for you to get out of the way. And so that's a problem. The level design in this, I will say they changed it up quite a bit. And this also includes some of the bits in the arcade you might not think it would, like the windy area where it's like blowing you backwards, which is cool. There's a couple areas like that. It does have the area where you're going upwards on the little platform. It's got that. Mm-hmm. I think they did a pretty good job bringing the spirit of the arcade home. If the spirit hates you, then they did it. You know, but I'm not going to say no frills because it did have sound. I would call it frill light when it comes to porting this over. But I mean, maybe their hands were tied. Anytime I see U.S. gold attached to something, I get nervous, you know? And I look at the stuff that Software Creations have done in the past, and I'm not familiar with that much of it. And so I'm like, well, I don't know how good. I mean, these guys may have been top shelf, but I don't know. You played the game, so you're telling me you didn't cheat at all the whole time. How far did you get?
Boss of level 2.
Really?
Yeah.
And that was using your continues.
Well, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, because that's not cheating.
Right. And so we should mention the bosses. I saw two. The guy that held his face in his hand and shot. That guy's very Japanese, by the way. Not so much medieval. And then I believe the second boss is like a big dog. And I saw him. Yeah, so I did get to those guys. I did beat them, and I hadn't cheated to get there. So as a straight-up play, what did you think about this in terms of its playability, fairness? What did you think about it? Because you're a good player.
I played this for about 90 minutes. I didn't invest as much time as I wanted to, and I'll just tell you why. It's the same thing with all these ports. It made me want to play the original. That's a little bit unfair to the Spectrum game because I think they did a fantastic job, but it's always going to be inferior because the hardware is not even close to as good as an arcade board.
Well, duh.
So I ended up playing this for about 90 minutes, and then I went and looked at the Commodore version of it, and it was really good, and it gave me a lot of clarity on the difference from the Spectrum to a full color version. Yes, the other one looked better, but it played much, much worse. And it gave me a lot of clarity to what the Spectrum actually pulled off here. They have a game, it runs silky smooth. It runs at a good pace. The scrolling is good. The enemy scrolling is good. Very, very rarely will they cheap out on frames of animation. When the zombies climb out of the ground in the first part of the game, I did notice they seemed to have to lack one frame of animation, which made them pop out of the ground faster, which made that section really far more difficult than it should have been. There is some flicker when you get too much on the screen at the same time. In 90 minutes, when I first loaded this up,
there's some slowdown too.
There is a little bit, but it's very minor. When I first loaded this up, okay, I couldn't get out of the graveyard portion.
Yeah.
So in 90 minutes, I was able to get to the boss of level 2, which, when you think about it, that's really, really good because there's only 5 stages as in this game. There's 1-1, 1-2, 2-1, 2-2. It goes on that. There's midpoint checkpoints.
Thank God.
This is incredibly playable is what I'm trying to say. It's incredibly playable, and that makes it an impressive port. When you look at some of the other ports out there that did not have the playability that this had, it shows you that they at least got the important parts right when they put this game onto the Spectrum. They got the playability. Yes, it's difficult. No, I don't think it's cheap. I think that...
Well, I think the arcade version is cheap.
No,
I don't blame them for making this one
cheap. It's not cheap. It's not cheap.
Cheap is where if stuff comes down at an angle, it's purposely made so you can't hit.
No,
that
no.
happens all the that, time. In this.
No,
the
that's buzzer. Not cheap. Cheap is making is when you have to make leaps of faith. Cheap.
This
is,
has those. This no, it has doesn't. Those. It does.
No, it doesn't. It does. It does not.
Yeah, it does.
It absolutely. Does.
You can jump
not.
Off stuff without seeing the bottom, and you can die.
Because no,
you don't see the bottom.
You can't. You jump off stuff, but there's. It's always safe.
You can't. Trust me, I did
there
it. I did it many times.
Anyway,
a pit's still a leap of faith.
No, there are pits that you fall into and die, but there aren't leaps of faith that the game forces you to make. That
no,
has
they
you
don't
take
force
damage
you to
at
make
a bottom.
Them, but you can make them and die without seeing the bottom.
The enemy variety in this is incredible. There are so many different enemies. Even on just the first, I watched the playthrough of the whole game, but in the first two stages that I played, I could not believe how many different enemy sprites they had. That takes a lot of work because they all had their proper animations. You had the big buzzards that would open their wings and fly down at you. You had the tornado baddies in the storm. The treasure chests are all a... You never pick up a treasure chest that was there when you just scrolled the screen forward. It's always going to be the magician that turns you into a duck. In the same vein as the arcade, you get your special weapons on this if you have gold armor.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. We got to talk about
where
that.
Where you
too.
Hold down the button and it gives you a special move depending on your weapon. It's incredible that they included that.
Well, you sort of have to put that in here, though, don't you?
Do you? I think if you didn't, because that wasn't something. Yes, it was in the arcade version.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was very helpful when you played, but you had to find it because this thing has tons and tons of hidden chests. And after you found it, you had to keep it long enough to actually make use of it. So I don't see it was a huge gameplay element. You can go through the entire game and never get it.
I wonder if some people don't even know about that.
It's very possible.
Because I didn't know until I was reading the cassette notes. I'm like, oh yeah, I totally forgotten about that.
Yeah. And it has different effects for all of the weapons. If you do the superpower with the daggers, you get two Arthurs. One's your ghost image, and you get double the firepower.
Yep.
The lance gives you the lightning that goes left and right and straight vertical. On and on and on. They're all there. That's impressive.
Here's the unimpressive part of the weapons. Like, if you get the fire drop early on, you're boned.
No, you're not.
Like, it's hard. And the thing is, weapons don't just pop up all the time.
No, they're
and
random.
And a lot of times you're stuck with a stupid thing. And that's the worst one. And every time I accidentally get it, I kick myself. I did that a lot, too. I hated that weapon. It was horrible. And you can might as well just start over, as far as I'm concerned. You accidentally get that one in your bone.
It's just like in the original games and in the arcade, the torch weapon is a very acquired taste.
Yeah.
And I personally don't like it. I try to get either the daggers or the discs.
Everyone wants the daggers.
Well, the discs are real good, too.
The daggers are the ones you want.
And if you get a weapon, you can just avoid getting a different weapon. You know, it's not like the game just says, bam, you have a new weapon. You have to have a zombie an enemy that's carrying it, and it has the little bag icon, so you know if they have it. Then you have to kill that enemy, and you'll either get a weapon drop from it or a point statue. And all of that's there. So it's not like you're just, if you pick up the fireball or something, it's because you picked it up.
Well, you actually, let me ask you a question I noticed. Every time I played through this game, the treasure chests were all identical. Is it the same way in the arcade? Is that the way they did it there?
What do you mean they're all identical?
Every time you open one, at one point in the game, it's exactly the same as it was the last time you played
yes.
it.
Yeah.
So you can literally memorize which one's not to
yeah.
use.
Yeah. Well, you never, like I said, if you scroll the screen and there's a treasure chest there, don't pick it up because it's going to be the wizard. To get the hidden armors, you have to jump in particular locations. And that will cause a treasure chest to come out of the ground.
Yeah.
And then those will have your special armors in them.
I didn't know that one.
Or sometimes they have weapons in them.
You know, so here's the thing with this game, just to kind of bring it around. I'm not going to, it's hard to not fault the ZX version but for being too difficult because that's the way it was. All right. What I would like to have seen, in all honesty, is some difficulty leveling in the home version. To let, because I mean, the thing is, this is why it's hard for me to kill this game. There's a lot of game here, and there's a lot of people, like, this is a lot of the kind of gameplay you don't get that often on the ZX. Like, exploration-style gameplay, where you're running through the different scenes and stuff. They mix it up quite a bit. And so, just in that area, I think it's interesting, the way the work that they did. I wish you could. It was easier to see some of this stuff and or to get to play some of it. I would have even liked to maybe have a practice thing where you could just skip to a certain level or pass codes. I know they're going to have a save system, but something to make it so you could get a little more bang for your buck, because I can envision people picking this thing up back in the day and never getting to see anything. I should mention, by the way, speaking of picking this up, according to what I found, when this was on sale, this was a the original price of this on cassette was £9, £8.99, and then they had a disc version of this you could pick up for £14.99. So if you had a drive, one of the rare people that has a drive, some kind of drive system for what you're loading this on, I think for £9, if you're a fan of the arcade game. And if you're prepared, and I will say, here's another thing. People back in the day were much more prepared to suffer for their good time. Well, they're not soft wiener boys like I am now. They were, and you know, you came from that Nintendo era too. You caught the tail end of it, where they made stuff like ultra hard 5,000. You could put this in the same, me and you played, what was it, Wizards and Warriors a while back on the show.
Mm-hmm.
This is something in the ballpark of a game like that. Lots of weird platforming. The theme sort of the same. But, I mean, the difficulty is, there's a high difficulty rate is my point on this.
With Wizards and Warriors, you continue right where you died.
Oh, yeah,
yeah. You don't have nearly the platforming that this has.
It's funny that there are some versions of this where you do continue from the exact point you died, just not this version. I believe the Genesis version lets you pick up right where you left off. So, yeah, some are more harsh than this. But, I mean, the arcade, it had checkpoints just like this did, and it was the same exact shtick. And you fought tooth and nail to get to that, where you saw the, in this game, when the screen would basically change colors.
Yeah.
The palette. That way you know you're okay. I made it here. You know, I can't tell you that made me happy.
There are a few flips that do that when it's just saying, okay, you're in a cave area, now you're outside.
Yeah.
So that's not always the sign of a checkpoint. Here's the thing with this game, Aaron.
Yeah.
My only complaint with the difficulty of it is I wish they would give you unlimited continues. Main reason is it makes you chip away so much more. Like I said, I died a ton. I continued a ton. And then I learned level one, right?
Yeah.
Well, then I start learning level two and I run out of continues. So I have to do level one again. And that's a grind I don't want to have.
Yeah.
I don't mind grinding through a game. I don't mind dying at the exact same place 30 times until I figure it out, as long as the game is fair. And I feel this game is fair.
Yeah.
I really do. But when you have six continues and then you have to go back to the beginning, for me, when I ran out of continues after dying to the stage two boss, I was like, I feel like I've done enough that I can make a competent review.
Yeah.
For our show.
Yeah.
But
that's why I cheated.
But I don't feel compelled to push through those places to learn the level to learn the end of level two, just to have to keep that grind up over and over. Back in the day, I can completely understand it. If this was your game, this is the game that you bought, you saved up your pennies for, you are willing to put in that grind.
Yeah.
And it is a sign of the time. It was something, I mean, I did that for Nintendo games all the time. I put in the grind. You know, when you have a game for 3 days, and when you're renting them, then you've got to give them back. You put in the grind to get as far as you can or to beat the game. Modern audiences don't know that.
We're soft.
Do not know that.
We all got soft. You're not wrong. You know, it's about, I just looked in the chat here. Duncan Styles, I think this is a review for the common man. Every time I've played it, I've quickly given up, never liked it. There you go. This is a game that if you like the arcade game, I think you can enjoy it. If you like a hard challenge, I think you can enjoy it. How do you think this reviewed, Brent? I've got the reviews right here. What would you think?
For the Spectrum?
Yeah.
I think it did incredible.
So, just to go down a few of these, Crash gave this a 92.
Yeah.
Crash Smash. Yours Sinclair gave it a 91. The Games Machine, 91. CBG, 85. Then you've got Sinclair User giving it an 82. And then all the way down to the modern, more modern take, Retro Archives gives us a 40.
That's a sign of the time.
This is why you've got to be careful with those modern looks, because you've got to sort of remember the time you were at.
Yes.
This was a CBG hit. It was a Crash Smash, as I mentioned. It was a Games Machine Star Player, and it was a Yours Sinclair Mega Game. It earned all these awards. And it had an average magazine review score of 84. Of course, that's with that 40, so you really didn't get higher than that.
85 is exactly where I would put this game. I think they could have done a little more graphically. I think they could have done a lot more with the sound.
Here's something funny. As you said that, in 1990, Crash Readers voted this the first best in sound. So, it shows you what you're getting in sound. They're like, "Your sound! It's a winner! It's clearly the winner!"
But yeah, I was really, really impressed. Also, coming from playing the Commodore version of this and seeing how poorly that played, it looks incredible. The Commodore version,
yeah.
I mean, visually, obviously, blows the Spectrum completely out of the water. But playability, it's just not there.
I got some Discord reviews here, if you'll indulge me, the brand.
No!
No, you will indulge me.
Oh, all right.
No one will stop or will not listen to the Pajaco review here. Pajaco chimes in. I have stuck a good couple hours into this game, and I've come to the conclusion that it's fundamentally broken. I'll take a hard game and get my backside kicked any day, but when a game feels unfair, it ruins the game. I've played the arcade a little and know it's a tough game, but the Spectrum seems brutal by comparison. As in the arcade, having the right weapon is key to this game. But in this version, if you pick up the fireball, you're boned. I couldn't have said that any better. And you might as well give up and start over. I think I did say that exact thing. Now, the fireball cannot be used where there are walls. The sprite collision is very trigger happy. Looking on a slow-mo video, you can take a hit from a couple of pixels away. And when you get stuck on the scenery and get taken out from an off-screen, it really makes for a very frustrating experience. I'm glad he brought that up. I do agree with that. The hit detection is a little wonky. Sometimes I'd be jumping over stuff that could hurt you, and it would just kill you, and you wouldn't be anywhere near it. It should drive me nuts.
I don't agree with that.
Well, you don't know. The sprites are awesome. Pajaka continues. It suffers from visibility issues in places, so you have to be eagle-eyed at times. Title music on the 128K version is great, but the game sound is poor. I feel this could have been great with a little more development time. All the components are there. Surely some hero homebrewer could fix this up nice-like. I know some folks love this one, Specky, but for me, it's a hard pass. It's playable, but too flaky to be fun. 5 out of 10.
Oh.
Jed Byrne chimes in. When I upgraded to a 128K, Ghouls and Ghosts was the first game I purchased. I wasn't disappointed. I love that. This is a guy who was there. It really showed off what the 128K could do. Tim Follin's jaunty music and the atmospheric sound effects are a joy after the silence of the 48K Ghosts and Goblins.
That's true.
The large levels all fit in memory without multi-load. See, we didn't even talk about that, but that's something we don't think about in 2024. But yeah, it is a technical marvel. The silky smooth multi-directional scrolling fills most of the screen and everything moves at a strong pace. Sadly, it's let down with some dodgy collision detection and unresponsive controls. I find it frustrating with the joystick and more responsive with the keyboard.
I did play with a keyboard.
I played with a joystick, so there you go. A good conversion that could have been great. It doesn't quite live up to the legacy of Ghosts and Goblins. And I believe that's all we've got in the reviews. Any final thoughts on this one, Brent?
I think it's so, so difficult for me to recommend port. But if you are looking for a side scroller on your Spectrum that is hard and you have to learn the game, you can't just play the game, you have to learn the game, this is among the best I've ever played for it.
I will say, as I mentioned, Fujiwara had many excellent games in his repertoire. And I would probably take Puyan, Commanded by Commanded Strider, Volgus, and Tiger Road over either one of these games. Well,
every one of those games are brutally hard, too.
Well, except for Puyan. This game, I never liked in the arcade because it was too difficult. I never liked the original game in the arcade because it was too difficult. And the Specky version is too difficult for me. You know, it just it's a personal failing. I can't help myself, but I'm not the only one. So if you're if you like to chew on a something that's going to really test you, test your patience, test your will, this may be the game for you. This would be the perfect game to load up on some sort of emulator with a save state. And that might be the way to go. Ignore the Brent.
Do not save do
states.
That.
Save state.
If you want to keep continuing, that's fine. But don't save state the game.
I mean, if you want to go in there, hey, sometimes people get off on the hardest games they can find and just getting slaughtered over and over. If that's your cup of tea, then this is the game for you.
If you want to sit down and learn a game, old school learn a game, this checks all the boxes. I think it's a very fair game. I think the collision, yes, it does have times of wonkiness. I will admit that. But I think it's solid enough, especially for a Spectrum game, to get in there and play and learn.
I will say, closing on this, I do give props to the I guess they were ordered to do it. But when someone tells you, listen, we need this ported here, this is an ambitious port.
Yes.
Because this is CPS-1 we're talking about here. This was an advanced, when this came out, it was obviously state-of-the-art in the arcade with graphics and sound and that we'd never seen.
Yeah, they
were
outstanding.
And so this is another one of those games. I will give them credit for this. It's not a disaster, and they gave it a pretty good try. I liked the graphical flair of the original a little bit more. But it was less ambitious overall because it's
absolutely
a different type of game. Not exactly different, but this one is you when you play it, you can say to yourself, okay, yeah, it's like the arcade sorta. I mean, it's not, they did a good job. That's what I like with the Spectrum. You know, it's tough. This is never a problem now, but back in the old days, I liked the idea of these crazy ports coming to these older systems, and sometimes they pull it off, and I think they pulled it off in the spirit of the arcade machine. That's why I'm not going to let my hatred for the arcade machine badmouth this. It's not that bad. I would say, in my opinion, it's a C-plus title.
It's way better than that.
Yeah, there you go.
So next week, Aaron.
Oh, here we go. I got it right here.
The next week on ARG Presents,
yeah,
we will be taking a look at...
Bam! A suggestion from Andy Fitzpatrick, the Mimotech MTX.
Yeah.
There it is, the Mimotech MTX. Thankfully, our guardian angel, Jocko, has already went in there and figured out how all that super crazy garbage, to just get this thing to run. It does have games, but actually, we'll be coming on next Sunday as our usual time, but... we want to mention, we'd be stupid not to mention this to Brent, on the 10th of February, which is just a few days from now, 6 days, it's time once again to get down to Boat's Basement for Amigathon 2024. It's our 12-hour yearly event where myself, John Boat of Carshaller, and the Brent, and a cast of thousands gather, convene in Boat's Basement, and play 12 hours of Amiga games to raise money for the Children's Miracle Network of Hospitals. The money goes directly to the kids.
The money goes directly to the charity.
Yeah, we raise our
money. It's not good to go, hey, kid, here's $1,000.
I think that's make those kids feel a lot better. The money is no. You know, there's a lot of unscrupulous charity controversy going on right now. And you don't have to worry about that with our Amigathon, because we never touch the money.
Yeah.
It goes directly through to the Children's Miracle Network, and we don't touch it. We have the site set up for you contributions. In fact, a couple people have already contributed.
Yes, you can do that starting right now.
Yeah, it's amigathon.com. Simple, right? I wish everything, all the addresses we have were that easy. Yeah. We're going to start next week at 8 a.m. 8 a.m. in Boat's basement. I'll be there with Boat. Brent will stagger in after he gets beautifully.
No, I have canceled my plans. I'll be there the whole time.
Holy smoke, you're going to be there at 8 a.m.? I've never seen you that early. That'll be a miracle. And then we're going to raise money for 12 hours. Britt, tell the people, you told me this figure, I couldn't believe it. How much did you say we've raised in the past six Amigathons?
Yeah, Amigathon has been going on for 9 years. This will be the 9th year.
Really? I thought we only had 7 or something like that.
Let me finish, Mr. Jump In.
I'm sorry.
The first couple Amigathons were for different charities. In the years that we've been doing the Children's Miracle Network, we have raised just shy of $30,000.
Yeah, I can't believe
just
that.
Just shy.
You know, and really, we're just some duplices playing games in a basement. So you, the listeners and viewers, are really the heroes here. And hey, listen, that's not chump change, brother.
No.
30K, that's pretty good.
It's good money.
We're going to try to raise a couple more K this year for the kids. I'm sure Boat will, in fact, as DS has asked, I'll be playing some Lionheart, and I guarantee there'll be some Addams Family because that's the way Boat does it. But we're going to be kicking it off at 8 a.m. Please join us. And then me and Brent are going to stagger in here next Sunday and do ARG, the Mimotech MTX. So our show schedule won't be changed. There won't be an Amigos on Friday, but there will be a special Friday Night Disaster stream that'll be airing on next Friday. And then, of course, we'll be doing Amigathon that next Saturday. It should be a lot of fun, the Brent.
Absolutely.
Now, let's talk about the next R. Sinclair, the Brent. You recall what the game is for the next one?
Badgers in Spain?
Baggers.
Baggers. Badgers, baggers.
We don't need no stinking badgers. we're going to be doing Baggers in Space on the ZX Next. This will be Brent's first foray into the ZX Next. You know, a lot of people just recently got their necks in the mail and are super happy. They're beautiful machines.
They are.
We looked at Mitsuyama's at Boat Fest last year, and I've got the Mr. Core. I thought I'm set, good to go. But I will say, having actually touched one, the tactile pleasure I felt would sort of makes me want to get one. The problem is that the non-tactile pleasure of sitting around for 5 years while they make a new one, if they decide to have another run, I wish they would. I wish these things were as common as, say, like the C64 or the A500 Mini. I wish they were like that, where you could just go out and get one at the store. It's tough to wait that long, you know. I'd pay the money. I just don't want to wait that long. But a lot of people waited that long, got them. So if you're looking for stuff to play, me and Bo covered the next title. Well, I think we did one. So this will be maybe the second, maybe the third next title that we played. And this is one of the ballyhooed titles that I heard about a long time before the next was even released. So it'll be a lot of fun. That'll be the next R. Sinclair. But tune in next week for ARG where we play Mimotech MTX. And please join us on the 10th for Amigathon. You got anything else to bring before we take it to the house?
Nope.
All right. You know what that means. Make sure you rewind tape.
And press play. Man.